Warning, this podcast recording may contain strong language. Enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to Film Fight, a film analysis podcast where we take two movies of similar story or plot and match them up to see which one works better and why.
My name is Zach Bassetta. I'm a writer and podcaster, and I'm joined with my co-host,
Amber Hollinger.
How's it going?
How are you doing, yes. Zach?
Good. I didn't mean to step over your credits there. I'm just
that
so excited
really
to talk
up.
About these two films. I know. I blame Red Heat.
After watching that, the quality of how someone should treat women, I can see how it's influenced you.
Yeah, I'm still trying to shake it back out of my system.
Well, today we're this is something new we're doing. Today we have two special guest commentators joining us ringside. Please welcome and say hi to re-recording mixer and post-production guru Stephen Walter. Hey,
hello,
Steve.
Hello. Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for hanging out.
Thanks for being here.
I'm excited.
You guys will be able to hear Steve's artistry on the upcoming Netflix series Heist, not to be confused with The Heist, although that's clever marketing.
I think they know what they're doing there.
Maybe our next guest, Jim, had something to do with that marketing. Our next guest is Senior Project Manager at Team One, Marketing and Advertising Strategist, Jim Vestano. Hey, Jim.
Hello.
Jim, you guys will not know him, but you'll know his work. He's worked on lots of popular campaigns and brands like Pepsi and Adidas and Sony. He's currently working on some national campaigns for Lexus that will launch later this year. So we'll be looking for that. In fact, Jim was bragging earlier that he's recording this in his Lexus.
How's it sound? Pretty good, right?
Some high quality sound right there.
Hear that? Everybody go get a Lexus right now.
Oh, right away.
So we have all watched the two films we're going to be discussing today. Our marquee matchup is 48 Hours versus Red Heat in the Action Buddy Cop edition, maybe even the 80s edition, since both of these were released in the 80s.
Sure.
Zach, what makes these two movies so special that we're going to talk about or unusual?
Well, beyond some other obvious comparisons that we'll get into, they're both written and directed by Walter Hill. So it is kind of interesting to see how one person, there are other writers involved, but for the most part, it was Walter Hill, and how he kind of takes, you know, the same idea in two different directions, and we'll kind of compare which one of those works and maybe which one doesn't. Are you guys into Walter Hill? Have you guys been into much of his movies before? Or?
Well, I do recognize Brewster's Millions with Richard Pryor, right? That was a good one. I remember that. And I know the Warriors, of course. Come out and
big
play.
Can you dig it, suckers?
How did I miss the Warriors?
You got to get on the
know
Warriors.
About it.
It's a classic.
It's a really good movie, yeah.
I'm going to have to check this out. I'm feeling inadequate at the moment.
Don't. It'll be great for you to discover it, but it's not required viewing for a lot of people, I guess. So don't feel too bad.
Let's break down the stats on these two movies.
Yes.
Introducing first, the film that launched Eddie Murphy's movie career, 48 Hours. It was directed by Walter Hill, who we just talked about. He also directed Brewster's Millions and The Warriors. He has 21 film credits to his resume. I think Trespass and Wild Bill, The Last Man Standing, and of course, our second movie we'll be discussing, Red Heat.
And he produced the Alien films. Kind of interesting.
Fair. You know, he was actually up to direct Aliens as first choice. And
wow, I actually didn't know that.
There.
What a different movie that would have been.
Right? This was released in 1982. It stars Nick Nolte, Eddie Murphy, Annette O'Toole, and other writers were Roger Spotswood, and I hope I've pronounced that correctly, Larry Gross, and Stephen D'Souza. Plot summary as found on IMDb. A hard-nosed cop reluctantly teams up with a wisecracking criminal temporary paroled to him in order to track down a killer.
That sums it up.
All right. Why don't you talk about Red Heat stats?
Red Heat, also directed by Walter Hill, written by Walter Hill, along with Harry Kleiner and Troy Kennedy Martin. Apparently, Harry Kleiner had written a script to try to break into the industry, and he gave it to Walter Hill. And Walter Hill just liked this one scene in the script, and so he purchased it for that one scene. So it's not
We'll talk about that scene.
And Troy Kennedy Martin, who's done a couple of other things, but yeah, the main guy is Walter Hill. And this one stars Arnold Schwarzenegger as a Russian, Jim Belushi as a detective, I guess. And this one came out in 1988, so 6 years after 48 Hours.
Guys, I watched two Red Heats. There's also one from 1976. Did you guys watch that one? I wasn't sure which one we were going to watch, so I watched both of them. And Arnold Schwarzenegger wasn't in the 1976 one. It was starring somebody named Lovey Goldmine. And it had a lot of extra footage that probably wouldn't fly today. It was very naked. I wasn't sure it was.
Were you on a porn site?
As a matter of fact, I was.
Okay, that's the confusion.
Like I said, I was confused. I wasn't sure. So I watched both of them, and they were surprisingly very similar. So,
interesting.
Yeah.
So you finished both.
Did the 1976 version have a happy ending?
It had several happy endings, but it's the plot was...
Was it just as believable as the 1988
version? The acting was almost as good. Red Heat did have a significant amount of nudity in it.
It's true. The opening scene was all nude.
The 88 version.
Yes. And I guess we should just quickly mention the plot summary from IMDb for Red Heat.
The 1988 version of Red Heat.
The 1988, very important distinction. A tough Russian policeman is forced to partner up with a cocky Chicago police detective when he's sent to Chicago to apprehend a Georgian drug lord who killed his partner and fled the country.
We've mentioned
before these IMDb summaries are not written by professionals, but that's basically what the movie's about. So two buddy cop movies where there's kind of a fish out of water element.
Absolutely. And I will say that Jim and Steve and I watched both movies as a group together. And
that's the way to do it.
I really don't know if there was any right way to do this.
What did you start with? What was first?
We started with Red Heat.
Oh, interesting. I went the other way. But I like to go in chronological order.
Let's talk about these scripts. Let's talk about the stories and where they came up with them. For 48 Hours, Roger Spottiswood, who I'm not sure, am I saying his name right?
I never heard of the gentleman.
Spottiswood?
Spottiswood?
That is...
Doesn't it kind of sound like a fake name?
It sounds like the name that would have been the other Red Heat movie.
The other Red Heat.
I think he wrote the other Red Heat. I think we had the wrong one in there.
Spottiswood. He's mainly known for directing. The only other two movies he's ever written is another 48 Hours. So this, basically, this is it for him as far as his writing career.
And maybe the 48 Hours franchise.
If he couldn't get any better, then he's like, I'm done. I'm out.
I don't even think I saw the second one.
I don't believe I did.
Hey, I had never seen the first one until last weekend.
What?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
it was
just
the first time for 48 Hours.
Oh, I'm dying to hear what you think about it.
Shocking.
Eye-opening, to say the least.
Well, Jim and Steve, you should know that Zach had also not seen Pretty Woman until we watched it for the podcast.
Wow. Yeah. We just watched that last night, actually, with my daughter. She wanted to see it.
Was my daughter over there? Because this has been a big discussion.
No, but I might have been. She wasn't over here, but they might
have discussed
it.
Zach, was your daughter over there? Because I know mine wasn't.
Nope.
I don't even have a daughter.
Yeah, mine doesn't exist, so.
They definitely weren't there.
Then there's a guy named Larry Gross, who also helped write on 48 Hours. He's got 16 movie credits, including We Don't Live Here Anymore, True Crime with Clint Eastwood, and Gunshy. So not lesser known, True Crime, great movie, Clint Eastwood. Mm-hmm. And that is interesting because one thing I have read about Walter Hill is his fascination and long love of Westerns. And he tries to write or direct some kind of Western influence in each one of his films.
Yeah, I didn't necessarily pick up on that just watching them as a movie fan. But now that, you know, they mentioned that, I can see it for sure. Even in The Warriors, oddly, which is about a group of New York gangs, Amber, you'll love it.
That's one of the podcasts.
There was the one scene at the end of 48 Hours that did remind me of like The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Everybody was staring and looking. And
yeah.
Lots of hallway shootouts, which apparently is another thing that he is known for, that in every film that he's written or directed, there is a hallway shootout. He makes sure of it, usually in a hotel.
Damn, that's even in The Warriors.
So think back on that. These two movies certainly had that.
They did. Yeah, we'll get into those similarities, but they were certainly there. Also, Walter Hill kind of has a grittiness to his films that at least Western films had that sort of grittiness as well.
One thing I will say about 48 Hours is it cannot be denied that it has been a huge influencer in the buddy cop genre film going forward. This is pre-Lethal Weapon, pre-Ride Along, pre-Bad Boys, Tango and Cash, Rush Hour, Running Scared, Stakeout, The Other Guys, 21 Jump Street. All of those movies took a big nod from 48 Hours.
Well, just, yeah, in the relationship, especially between the cops, because the idea of the two cops that don't really get along, but they got to solve a case together. Seems very cliche now, but I guess it was kind of started in 48 Hours.
It didn't seem like Red Heat, the cops ever got along.
No.
Well, it would help if they shared some screen time.
Can we get into Jim Belushi or should we save that for later? I got a lot to say about it.
Wow.
Oh boy.
We can get into casting. We can get into other script, whatever you want.
It's almost pointless that he was in the film. There was nothing that he moved plot-wise other than just to kind of, I don't know, be attempted comedy or...
It didn't even come across that they were supposed to be like some arc where they have a shared experience and then they grow together and then at the end they're friends or something like that, but it never worked. It was like they hated each other at the beginning and they somehow at the end were friends enough to pass the watch off or something like that. But, you know, in the scene directly before that, they were still pointing guns at each other. It didn't make any sense. I didn't feel that part worked at all.
Also, there was no reason for them to not like each other. They were not in direct competition with each other. They weren't a threat to each other.
But I think that was it, is that the implication was that it was already there because he was Soviet Union and Jim Belushi was America. Oh, right. And it's just like,
it was just straight up racist.
Well, there's the Cold War thing was happening, right? In the 80s.
Yes, exactly.
So I forgot about that. Like he would be already seen as an adversary, regardless of what his personality was.
Exactly.
And, you know, I have to say that Arnold Schwarzenegger, I mean, this was his role right after Terminator, which was a groundbreaking role for him as an actor. Like he had done Conan and a couple of other things. Terminator was huge because it was a character that was written for him specifically because of the way he acted. His acting style, if you can call it that at the time, was like a robot. It was very, you know, and so it totally worked. That's why Terminator was so awesome. And then he tried to move that into this movie and try to do a Russian English accent, which was a terrible choice.
Very
bizarre. It was a very Kevin Costner Robin Hood experience listening to him try to keep a hold on that accent. But funny enough, you should say that Terminator was written for Arnold because Red Heat, this role was also written for Arnold. The whole reason that Walter Hill wrote it was so he could do a movie with Schwarzenegger, and he thought this Russian image was going to be the thing that would be super compelling for
couldn't
people.
Couldn't he have just done his regular Austrian accent? I mean, nobody would have known the difference.
Yeah. You know? And also, basically, he played the same exact Terminator role, just as a Russian with a big jacket on. I mean, his lines were delivered like the Terminator. That's what it sounded like. It sounded like the Terminator.
Very, very large. It was a very, like, costuming is very ill-fitting, that jacket.
I almost feel like that was part of the idea, just again, just a knock at the Soviet Union. Like they can't even get their clothes to fit.
They're humorless.
Yeah.
They're cold. They can't get their accent straight.
It is interesting that Walter Hill wanted to make a movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger. And it's like, who do we pair up with Arnold Schwarzenegger? Jim Belushi.
This is really interesting to me. In 48 Hours, Hill had envisioned whoever was going to play Reggie Hammond, he wanted an improvisational kind of feeling or actor. He had originally chosen Richard Pryor, who passed on the role. I believe the movie The Toy came out the very same year 48 Hours came out. So when they were going down the line, I think they tried to get, is it Gregory Hines after Richard Pryor?
Which is such a strange choice.
I mean, he's black.
Sure. But,
yeah. Yes, he is.
I mean,
I think that was the main thing that they needed some, you know, a black comedian. And Eddie Murphy was on Saturday Night Live and just killing it and thought this might be a good fit for it. But he intended always for that actor in that role to be able to bring his own brand of humor to the table. Where you'd think, in comparison with the Jim Belushi role, he's also a Saturday Night Live alum, also works in improv. And couldn't bring shit.
Was Jim Belushi on SNL?
No, John Belushi. John, I think maybe he had thought John Belushi. When was the movie made? John
Belushi would have died in 82.
So maybe that's too late. But, you know, they're like, John Belushi would have been hilarious.
Jim Belushi, for sure.
He just came across as angry and adversarial for no reason.
Yeah.
You know, like, why are you so angry? Stop being so angry. Just relax.
And he was usually very relaxed on screen. And it seemed under what kind of direction Hill was giving him, he seemed very stilted and uncomfortable in all of his delivery.
Yeah. Whereas Nick Nolte was kind of that same character in a way. Like, he was very haggard and like, but he pulled it off.
Yes.
I don't know. I think in a way that Jim Belushi is a combination of those two characters from 48 Hours.
Yeah, they were trying to make him the grizzled veteran and the like rebel bad boy, and none of it landed for me at all. I think I was looking at my notes. I deciphered two jokes in that whole movie, maybe laugh, maybe three. That's not good.
Stephen, my notes, I wrote that you said Red Heat was the godfather of buddy cop movies.
It's actually in my notes.
I remember hearing
that. Okay, look, that's taken slightly out of context. We were discussing how slow and how arduous the cutting was, and the pacing was so slow in that movie. And then we were like, how does this ever work? And I said, well, in The Godfather, the pacing is slow and it's a lot of talking and it's not like a lot of quick cuts or action scenes in The Godfather, and that works. And Jim goes, you're comparing this movie to The Godfather.
And you said yes.
The porno Red Heat had way more action.
That's it. Let's talk about the pacing in Red Heat. The wasted amount of real estate going on in the traveling and walking. And I think I had made a comment that I had wondered if they had actually filmed a scene with them, with all the characters walking across the street in wet cement, chasing after each other. And then there was just no time and they had to cut it. It was like they purposely tried to pick things that could slow this film down. We're like, what can we do to stop or impede the storytelling at any cost?
Remember how long we were in Russia at the beginning? So the opening scene is in this like sweaty bathhouse, no dialogue, Arnold Schwarzenegger in a loincloth, and he walks up to some guy and punches him through a window into the snow, and then they're fighting.
A co-ed bathhouse, I should.
Oh, yes, yes. That's what made me confused with the two Red Heats, because they start similar.
Anyway, yeah.
But no dialogue, and so you're like, all right, this is kind of cool. But then we spend the entire opening credit sequence.
At that point, Steve was all into the movie. He's like, I don't know what this is about, but I really like it.
Yeah, he thought he was watching the other Red Heat also, at the same time. So
awesome. So yeah, but then we're like in this, what should have been two or three cuts of the Kremlin, some guys marching, a tank, a big missile. Oh, we're in Russia. Cut to story. No, it was probably 11 minutes of stock footage of
wasn't it like half an hour before they got to like Chicago and really got going?
Over a half. It was almost 40 minutes into the movie until our two main characters met. Also, though, I would like to say there was so much stock footage because this was the first American film that was given permission to film in Moscow. So I don't know if they were just taking footage and then going, oh my God, this is our only chance to show footage of Moscow because everybody cares. But then later I found out that only three shots of the actual Moscow footage were used and everything else was shot in Hungary. Jim would argue that these were all miniature sets shot in Wisconsin, but that's not verified.
That was my take on it. It was based in Wisconsin, but just these sets were built. That's what it kind of looked
Amber,
like.
And Amber bought it for about a minute.
It said it was shot on location in Moscow, Chicago, and Vancouver.
Hungary. I think 15 minutes of that footage was shot in Hungary.
Whatever it was, it was boring.
It was. So when I'm looking at both of these films, initially, I just want to look at anything that stuck out as common structure. So both of these movies wanted to introduce the villain and one of the cops before they brought in the buddy cop. Okay, so Red Heat, we just said, took about 40 minutes to get Arnold and Belushi together. In 48 Hours, it wasn't so far off from that, but 10 minutes into the movie, they do throw out Reggie's name. So if you're paying attention, they are trying to bring him into the story a little bit earlier as a key component of what's going to be happening later. And about 25 minutes in, we meet Reggie. The biggest difference between these two films is two 48 Hours credit. Once Reggie and Nick Nolte's Kate's character get together, they spend pretty much the entire movie going forward in every scene together, in every situation, working through this case, in extreme contrast to Red Heat, which they might have spent screen time total 15 minutes together on screen?
Well, like in 48 hours, they each are helping each other in certain ways advance the investigation. Whereas I felt like in Red Heat, Arnold Schwarzenegger had his plan and like Jim Belushi would maybe drive him somewhere, but he wasn't really helping him solve the case.
They were not working together at all. They didn't speak to each other at all. They knew nothing about each other. The first time Eddie Murphy's and Nick Nolte's character gets together, Eddie starts digging in deep in his personal life. They start getting to know each other right off the bat. They're building all these believable blocks of friendship.
And listen, I'd never seen sober Nick Nolte, to be honest with you. They had chemistry together.
Yeah. He was back then, he was sort of that guy he could be, but yeah, it still to me sounds like he gargles like pieces of glass on the off season. Ugh.
I think the pairing of a cop with a convict is more interesting than maybe two cops. So you can have different ideology as peace officers, but in general, you're kind of bound by the same code of ethics per se, even though you can have a loose cannon cop. I was really enthralled with the idea of how they set up from beginning to end in 48 hours that Nick Nolte's character, Jack Cates, is not like all the other cops. He's the only cop that has no tie, with his shirt unbuttoned. He has a different color palette than the rest of the police officers. His hair is kind of long and shaggy in contrast to everyone else who has really short cropped hair and buttoned up suits with ties. He's putting some kind of alcohol in his coffee in the morning. Like, this guy's just breaking rules all over. He is very dismissive with his girlfriend. He's not like, yeah, get over it, bitch. He's like all of his personality traits are planted specifically, I think, to make it more believable in the end that he and Reggie are not so different at all.
Right. That's true. That's a good point.
I think April, I was gonna say the same thing. They really defined Nick Nolte's character at the beginning, so you knew exactly what kind of person he was. Where in Red Heat, they never really did that. You never really got a sense of who Jim Belushi's character was. You don't know what he believed, how he is. And the same thing with Arnold Schwarzenegger, you don't really know them. But Nick Nolte, from the beginning, all those things you mentioned, how he treated his girlfriend, to put in the alcohol in his coffee, the way he's dressed, the way he acts, you get this picture of him from the very beginning. And I think that helped define, you know, their roles in the movie, where you can see them now together as how they're going to fit together.
Right. And the reason I said that Jim Belushi was kind of a combination is because in Red Heat, he's kind of the horny, you know, quote unquote, funny one. Whereas in 48 Hours, Eddie Murphy is like, he's just trying to get laid and he's in the funny one. It just works better.
Yeah.
I do have to point out, as a woman and the only woman on this podcast, that the display and attitude towards women in the 80s, at least in these two films,
it was terrible.
It was really crazy. There was not, every time a woman was on screen, she was either belittled, dismissed, she was
naked,
or she was basically just there for sex, or she was called stupid for no cause at all. When Nick Nolte goes into his character Jack Cates, before he even meets Eddie Murphy, they go into this hotel to find Billy the villain, and there's a receptionist there, and he just walks up to her and he basically just calls her stupid for no reason. She's just sitting there.
She was being stupid.
Yeah.
Did you see her try to call the police on the phone?
she was hitting the hang up button like it was like,
I can't get hello.
He was like, operator. Like, we didn't have 911 in 1984.
And then they made sure that she was stupid.
Well, what strikes me as weird is in 48 hours, the first time we see women, they're both topless and being thrown around and stuff like that. And then we actually go to a strip club at one point and she has pasties on. Now, what's that about? That had to have been something to do with the MPAA. You know what I mean? Like, they could show somebody because she was in her house getting dressed, but they couldn't show somebody up dancing naked.
The logic was there was staggering. And I believe we had to take a moment during the viewing to be like, what?
Yeah.
Maybe it's a commitment to realism and Los Angeles doesn't allow full nude.
Have you been in downtown LA?
Beg to differ.
No. I've never been. I wouldn't know.
I mean, I've been told. I don't know.
And one interesting similarity that both of these movies had prostitutes that were caught in crossfire. It was kind of odd.
That happens all the time to prostitutes.
I had also noticed both of these movies have a bar scene that has fight of some kind in it. In 48 Hours, that scene is used to elevate Reggie Hammond's character. It's the first time
really one of the best scenes in the movie.
I agree. And what was interesting is what's in the script is the bartender says, you know, maybe you want a Black Russian, but Eddie's response was completely improvised. And I thought it was great. Yeah.
And I think that's what helps make this movie so good, so much better than Red Heat is Eddie Murphy can do that. And it's believable. It doesn't seem forced. It seems very natural. And it adds to his character. Whereas the other movie, you really didn't get that. Even if Jim Belushi tried to do that, it didn't work.
Which is genuinely funny.
A white Russian. That was his joke. A white Russian.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, look at that. White Russian, Black Russian.
Right. Hey. That's the only joke that you
who
could
did
do.
That both
see? Walter Hill knows.
It's only drinking knows on a make.
I saw this movie once back when I was a kid, and the only scenes I remember from the movie 48 Hours, I'm talking, I never saw Red Heat, probably never gonna see again. But the scenes I remembered from 48 Hours were when Eddie Murphy's singing Roxanne in the jail scene, and then the bar scene when he basically out rednecks the rednecks.
Yeah.
And then switches. It was brilliant. You know what I mean? Like really good.
It showed his intellect. It showed that he is now on equal footing of Nick Nolte's character.
And it was a believable way for him to earn Nick Nolte's respect, I thought.
Absolutely. Where then in contrast, if you look at the bar scene in Red Heat, that scene is almost used to say how incompetent Arnold's character is. He goes in after the bad guy. Bad guy gets away onto a rooftop chase with a whole other thing, but you're basically just saying he's not a very good cop. It was really interesting how they used one scene to elevate one character and one to show the ineptitude possibly of the other one. But I do have to say, there are not a lot of things that surprise me in movies anymore. But in that Red Heat bar, when Arnold is chasing the villain Victor and he gets into a scuffle with some random dude, he tackles this guy on the ground and he grabs his leg and it looks like he's going to break his leg off. It's pretty intense.
Terrifying.
And he does take that. It's a wooden leg. He rips this wooden leg
off of
this guy and then dumps what could be like a 5-pound bag of playground sand of powdered cocaine from this wooden leg. I did not see that coming.
It actually, I made a noise like, ah! Like that when I saw it because it scared me so much when he twisted his leg.
And he grabbed my leg.
I think Jim's wife, Leslie, was asleep, but everybody else went, ah!
That was the scene that Walter Hill bought from that other script.
Yep.
And it was the best script scene in the movie.
That was the only part.
That would sell me on that script. I'd be like, as long as I get to keep that scene.
It's so strange because it wasn't like the action in Red Heat was even close to something like 48 Hours or Terminator or any of the movies that would be considered an action movie. The action was so bad, except for the end, which we can get into in a minute. But the car chase, the foot chases, there was no like, he jumped like on a roof and ran off and then somehow he gets on a plane and flies to America.
The term chase is very loosely used here. And in fact, I was a little agitated thinking, do I need to take any kind of litigious action here? Because you cannot build this thing as an action comedy movie when there is no action. There's no comedy. And then you can't even bill it as a buddy film because there's no budding.
Mm-hmm.
It was a chance for Arnold to stretch his acting ability from a robot to a Russian robot.
Exactly. And
with a shitty accent.
It's also maybe worth mentioning the two bad guys in the films. Edel Ross is the bad guy in Red Heat, who I don't think is actually Russian, but playing a Russian. And the bad guy in 48 Hours is James Remar, who has been used in several Walter Hill movies. I feel like I can't say his name today.
Was he the one in the crocheted sweater vest?
Oh, we have to talk about this. This needs precious real estate in this podcast.
He had a sweater vest that was like macrame the whole time.
Knowledge.
You might be right.
Villain, we are right. This bad guy that you are to believe will slit your throat on a park bench or shoot you in the forehead on a park bench like you left that one dead guy is wearing a cable knit sleeveless V-neck sweater vest with no shirt on underneath. This is not acknowledged at any point during the film. He is walking downtown in the streets of LA like this.
Oh, we acknowledged it.
acknowledged it because I used to wear that in almost exact same outfit in college.
That was the biggest thing that I learned out of this whole experience was that at some point, and this is also unverified and I still need to see photographic evidence of this, but Steve Walter claims to have had a vest very much like this and have a picture of it, and then claims he just conveniently packed that box away.
No, the pictures are right up in my, I'm not going to find it, but it had buttons. Mine had buttons, and it was.
But this was a very conscious choice that costuming made, and I question it.
I think, you know, he was watching cartoons. He's wearing a sweater vest with no shirt. He's shooting people in the forehead. I think they wanted us to think that he was crazy. I don't know if that's right, but remember when he was watching cartoons, so maybe he's a little bit cuckoo.
I think James Remar is a little bit cuckoo. I make cartoons
for a living, Steve.
Yeah, but these were like terrible cartoons.
Yeah, real bad ones.
Yeah, they were bad. You're making good cartoons. Oh, these were terrible.
It's very revealing.
Yeah, anyone watching your cartoons, Amber, would have sleeves.
Thank you, Jim.
You're welcome.
And just to give you an idea of the type of comedy that is in Red Heat, when Jim Belushi goes to pick up Arnold at the airport, there's an announcement about the red zone. I parked in a red zone. And he's like, you should know about those.
That worst.
And my initial thought was, are there red zones at airports? I know there are white zones.
Yeah, they're for loading and unloading.
He turns to him and said, we're parked in the red zone. No offense.
That's it. Yes.
Maybe Walter Hill's strength, and I say maybe when I mean completely and definitely, is not his strength. Some of Belushi's lines that he was given is, I swear on my balls. He says, oh, this Victor Rasta, he must have pissed off quite a few commissars for them to send someone all the way just to babysit him. What did he do? Take a leak on the Kremlin wall or something?
I mean, it's like
absolutely not. No.
Open mic comedy.
That's where you need improvisation.
I would bet or gamble on first time stand up people over this dialogue. The biggest joke of the whole thing was Belushi telling Arnold that he looks like Gumby because he puts on a green suit.
Yeah.
I think that there was a bit at the end that was unintentionally funny. They were getting ready to go. Remember, that was the whole, hey, let's go. Wait a minute.
Like, he didn't even give him.
That was like the only part that was funny to me because it was ridiculously, he acted it terribly, Jim. He said, hey, let's hurry. And then he immediately says, wait a minute.
No,
and then
he goes into some exposition. He's in the car with Arnold and they're getting ready to go into the club or something. It was after one of those like ridiculously long car chases, quote unquote. And they're sitting in the car and then Jim Belushi's looking around. He's like, let's go. Wait. Who are you talking to at this point? It's like, you're the one who said, let's go. Now you're saying, wait. And Arnold is basically just sitting there.
He hadn't even moved. Like,
what's going on here?
He's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
That was the only part that made me laugh, aside from two other jokes that I can't remember.
I don't know what happened. If there's maybe Walter Hill has Belushi kryptonite and took away all his ability to be funny.
I think he just had a good experience with Eddie Murphy and hoped for the same. It's like, that's you're true. A comedy guy.
Because you know, Belushi is a funny guy. There's no reason why he shouldn't have been funny. It was almost like he was directed out of that. He seems like he was overly coached and self-conscious in his performance, which is unfortunate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like he just told him to be angry and not have any reason behind it.
Exactly.
I also question the strength of the story in general, that we spend so much time traveling or cementing our location geographically.
Right.
And not so much on what the characters are thinking or feeling. And I think we were making fun of several points that we weren't quite sure what was happening. And then at that moment, somebody would walk into the police station with a stack of papers and just start reading what was happening.
That's right.
It's like they were reading script.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, so instead of just showing us who the bad guy is and where he comes from and what he's up to, they're just like, I will just read it to you.
Yeah, that's
five
right.
5 minutes. We watched an entire scene for 5 minutes of some random person reading us exposition in a police report. And during this time, Belushi's character is vaguely pacing across the room, clutching his chin in his...
It's called blocking.
It was unbelievable. Like, that happened more than two times where we sat and just saw some guy read the script, basically.
It was so lazy.
Well, it's it because I watched Red Heat more recently, and I remember far more about 48 Hours than Red Heat.
So do I.
No, yeah, for
it
sure.
Happened in Red Heat, except for that wooden leg filled with cocaine. That one guy, what did you call it, Steve, on the rooftop when the bad guy went on the rooftop for the chase, which was an interesting choice. and then got caught and then had this gun. Is it Dillinger? What did you say? A Derringer?
Oh, like the little Heidi gun. Yeah. The,
it was like one of those little James Bond gun that flicked out of his coat sleeve. I was not expecting that.
It was done so much better in Django.
Well, you cannot compare.
I'm comparing Quentin Tarantino to Red Heat and Martin Scorsese and Oliver Stone and Stanley Kubrick.
And then in 48 hours, I feel like the investigation, it made sense. There was progression. You had David Patrick Kelly, who is also in Warriors and a great actor, as the sort of stoolie, I guess. I don't really know. It made more sense that there were actual steps, whereas Red Heat, I know he had to find Victor. They went to the hotel. Then they found out he'd been at a bar recently. So they checked that out.
Then there was this whole long conversation in a parking garage where they were just standing.
Yeah, that was a very long scene in that
took
parking garage.
Forever. And they were talking in Russian, right?
Oh my gosh, the beginning of the movie. It was probably 20 minutes of people speaking in Russian. And we were like.
And the subtitles were white. And there was a white background. So you couldn't even read what the guy. So it's like, am I supposed to be paying attention to this?
In Russia, subtitles very hard to read.
But basically was just saying like, nothing we're saying is important.
Yeah, nothing. None of this matters. Just watch Arnold in his loincloth. How many times in that movie did he just walk up to a person and not say anything and just punch him right in the face? Like at least twice.
One move. He didn't have any other moves.
You saw it coming from a mile. I saw it coming. Like, how did the guy who got punched through the window not see that coming?
Completely taken by surprise.
Yeah. And his weird obsession with Miranda Law, like he asks him right before he punches him if he knows Miranda Law, as if it's a person.
Right. Yeah. That was supposed to be the joke. Do you know Miranda?
You know Miranda?
Wait, Arnold, is that you?
If I close my eyes, it's like he's in the room with me. The only part of Red Heat that I actually enjoyed, well, that's too strong of a word. The only part of Red Heat that I tolerated slightly was the bus chase at the end. That to me was worth, well, no, it wasn't. It was kind of cool because I don't recall ever seeing two buses, but it was overly chaotic.
You have not recalled in any cinematic experience seeing two buses.
Speed
was one bus.
Right, until the very, very end. I don't remember ever seeing two buses chase each other, but it was overly chaotic. I feel like I've never driven a bus in my life, but I feel like I could have done 100% better of evading statues and other cars than this idiot.
Yeah, important Chicago landmarks.
Yeah, I just ran right over a giant statue.
Wait a minute, didn't 48 hours also end in a bus ride?
It did. You're right. Because the girl was in the bus.
They kidnapped.
Right.
We spoke about this and thinking, no, we shouldn't just steal this car.
That's right.
Let's
a giant bus.
Procure a giant bus with all the lights on and take that with our one, because we have three people here and it might be crowded in a regular sedan.
And they sat all the way in the back of the bus.
Yeah. And I mean, they were driving in the middle of what was supposed to be downtown
San Francisco
with a bus with all the lights on, and the guy's got a gun and they're shooting out the window, and then Nick Nolte's also driving his car shooting out the window. I mean, like,
no traffic.
It was awesome. Like,
never calls for backup, I don't believe.
He's driving around that crappy Cadillac the whole time, which I thought was interesting. I thought that was kind of cool that he stuck to his car no matter how bad it was. And Eddie Murphy's car was actually quite nice.
One bit of continuity that I thought about later, which is the whole reason they were going on this chase is they had the babe, they had the chick, right? And then after they shot the window of the bus, we never saw her again.
Yeah, I don't remember what happened to her.
Like, it was just because it didn't matter, Steve. She didn't care. It was a woman.
The whole purpose, she was kidnapped at the very beginning. Wasn't that the whole purpose of the movie was getting her back?
Well, no, it was because David Patrick Kelly needed a reason to. Can explain the whole movie.
Please do. Please do. Please do.
Well, so David Patrick Kelly had the key to the car, right? Uh-huh. And so it turns out that Eddie Murphy needed that car because there was all this money inside. It doesn't open. The parking garage doesn't open till Monday. So they got to just bum around on all Sunday.
How long do they have together? I forget. Is it 24? No, 36 hours. How
many? You're close.
Oh, I feel 48. Like I'm, I don't. Oh, 48 hours.
So it really, if you timed it, it was only 46. So it was kind of weird.
You jerk.
Because Eddie Murphy could only be out of jail for 48 hours. That's how long they had to solve the case.
Speaking of time, how long of a time in hours would you guess the Red Heat plot occurred in? We have no idea.
The timeline there.
It could have been
a day?
10 hours? It could have been 2 weeks?
All in one day, or it could have been a month.
It felt like a year to watch it. It was bizarre because we were thinking, like, nobody's slept. Nobody's ate. You know,
no one
like,
used the restroom.
I suppose you don't have to put that in the movie, but you could put something in that establishes time.
It was
like,
nice
I think it got dark, but then it was light and then dark again.
Yeah, there was no continuity there. And apparently it didn't matter to the story, and or nothing in that movie mattered to the story.
Zero.
But yeah. Like 48 hours, it gave you some kind of urgency. Why am I having to tell the story now? Although I do wonder if Eddie Murphy's old partner knew that all that money was in the car and all he had to do was go and get the money for the last 2 years. Why? Because Reggie's been in prison for like 2.5 years. Why did nobody go get the money before now?
That's a good question, Amber.
We could talk about the key in Red Heat that was such a big deal. I was just thinking about, like, why didn't he go get the money?
He didn't know what it was from for a long time.
Right.
Remember
right.
when Jim Belushi's friend just happens to work at a key making place?
Yeah. No, I do not remember that.
Book, he picks up a book in English and somehow locates the freaking key and where it goes to in this book.
Do not remember
you know that.
That
all locksmiths have a master book of every key and what it goes to?
Can I borrow it? I have some keys in my drawer right now. I don't know more.
I want one of those books, though.
The MacGuffins were interesting in both movies, whereas in 48 Hours, it's like just getting this car and, you know, it's got the money in it. But then in Red Heat, there's this key. There's this half of a $100 bill.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Just
like it was that was supposed to mean something and it didn't.
Well, I think it was that when Victor meets the guy at the end, he's dressed like Michael Jackson from the Moonwalker video or whatever it's called.
Right.
And he's like, I'm looking for a guy with half a $100 bill. And he's like, I guess it was so he would know they were on the same team.
Ugh. I had already given up. I had already given up by then. After the bus chase.
I think several times I said, what's happening here? Like, I had really no idea what was happening.
In Red Heat.
No, that was just in Jim's bathroom. I'm like, what's happening in here?
I was thinking the same thing when you're in my bathroom. What's happening here?
You know, I would say that we were trying to make things work that weren't working. Amber and I were looking at the color scheme of Red Heat, which is actually pretty. There's lots of red and there was lots of green. You know, we thought maybe, they're trying to show the Christmas movie. It's like Die Hard. We thought maybe, they're trying to use that as imagery. Maybe when they get together, the color theme will change. And it didn't. It just, here's our green wall and here's our orange staircase. It didn't make any sense at all. It was
although
pretty.
I do have to say 48 Hours is the same thing. It was a blue and yellow color scheme. And that was just the color story. There was no attachment or meaning or evolution of the color story. It was just, so he was consistent in his directorial decisions. However, I had for a moment forgotten that he directed both these films because 48 Hours, pretty solid shot selection, scene transition, lead-ins, continuities, pacing. So just really decent. A lot of strong things happening. And then 48 Hours, I thought someone else had directed it. And I had in my notes at one point, wow, I wonder what would happen to the script if Walter Hill had directed this one, just like he directed 48 Hours. And then he had.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking to see who the cinematographers are. They were DP'd by different people. So maybe.
It looked like two different directors. It was so different. And this is, we've talked about, these things only happened 6 years apart. Mm-hmm. And
if it was opposite, if Red Heat came out first and then 48 Hours, then it would kind of make sense to me because, okay, this is what didn't work in this movie and now I can make it work.
Exactly.
But it's the opposite.
The main difference is Eddie Murphy.
No, for sure.
I mean, Nick Nolte's solid and you could believe his character, but this was Eddie Murphy like coming out. It was just, we just kept saying this is one of the main reasons why this worked. Sure, the script might have been a little more cohesive and the story might have been a little bit easier to tell, but his performance is what made the movie.
Yeah, you have to like the characters that you're watching, and you do like Nick Nolte and Eddie Murphy together, whereas you never even see Arnold and Belushi together, so you don't even know if you like them, but what you do, so you're like, God, these guys are jerks. I don't think I like them.
Right. Although what I found is watching 48 Hours for the first time and knowing that it had a reputation as being like a popular movie, whereas in Red Heat, the beef, I guess, is like you're a Soviet and I'm American. I was surprised at the amount of racism in 48 Hours. I'm from Texas. And I heard every racial slur I can think of in that movie, except one, which was in the script, but not actually in the film, which was interesting.
Say it.
I mean, it's not the bad one, because that was in the movie 3 or 4 times.
Yes.
Jigaboo is in the script, but not the movie. It was replaced with Soul Brother, which is probably a good choice.
I think after maybe they would just kind of back it up a little bit after the watermelon comment, after he literally
Yeah, we had to rewind that and say, did he really just say that?
We did. We were, I mean, I think these are such yesterday terms that aren't part of our everyday vernacular, and it was shocking. Or was this a distinctive choice to show the disdain between the two characters?
I think it's mostly
and the class difference between these two characters.
Yeah, because there was sort of a thing in the 80s, especially like in the grittier stuff, where there were a lot of racist characters, at least in stuff I've read. Yeah. And to illustrate that there are racist people in the world. And I feel like that has been pulled back today.
Nick Nolte's character, he had a redemption scene. They were in the bar together and Jack's character came over to Reggie and straight up apologized for calling him names. He just straight up owned that he was a jackass and apologized. I was very appreciative of that moment in the film. Not that it redeemed his character completely, but it made me feel better watching it, like, oh, this guy at least knows he stepped over some boundaries here. That
I think that he was still a racist, but he was just an apologetic racist. If you wanted to keep him in his place as a convict and this is the cop and there's a hierarchy, I suppose there's a way to do that. I just know that if I was going to be in that position, there would be a different way that I would go about it, because I'm not a racist, you know. But Nick Nolte knew he knew where to hit him to keep him in line. And that was the easiest way to do it.
And even the police captain who was black calls Eddie Murphy's character that.
Yeah. Right. And I can do it because I'm black.
Well, and he did say, yes, I did say that. So he acknowledges what he said, and he said, yes, I did say that.
I think we discussed that that was the first time that they had that over-the-top police chief guy that has been copied in so many movies that this may have been the
Frank
first one.
Frank McRae, who has copied that character himself. he was the police chief in Last Action Hero.
That's right. I mean, we were talking about all of like Ice Cube's done it, Beverly Hills Cop, all of these. It's all that character. And this guy, kudos to him, one level. 10 the whole time.
10 the entire time, just scream the entire time.
Yes, which is totally one of those like buddy cop cliches that I personally love. The asshole police chief.
You have to look at the time that it was made. That was, I suppose, more acceptable, but looking through today's
very
sketchy. I thought that it was interesting at the end of 48 Hours, when they went to the club, they had at least 3 musical numbers that didn't really do anything for the story.
Yeah, and they're in the script.
Well, Boys Are Back in Town was like the big hit, you know, but there was this whole other, and I'm like, what are we doing here?
It's interesting that you bring that up. Yeah, because I felt like in a way it was, I don't know if celebrating is the right word, but like celebrating black culture in a sense.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
Like, hey, here's Eddie Murphy's scene. And
this is the stark contrast to the redneck bar with the Confederate flags and all the good old boys.
Yeah, I actually did feel I thought was a fair representation of Eddie's world when the boys are back in town. There were some other moments that maybe were stretched out, but I think Zach and I, didn't we discuss in one conversation, a feature film has to be 78 minutes.
Something like that. Yeah. That 78 right? is right. official
so
length. Yeah.
I wonder how long, let me see, 96 minutes runtime for 48 hours. I thought maybe they just had to kind of stretch out. I was fairly certain that was happening in Red Heat with just all those long walks across.
Oh, we're still in Russia. Oh,
the really weird thing is that 48 hours just had a lot more heart to it. I didn't mind the length of 48 hours.
No, it didn't feel like 10 years when you were
there. No, it really didn't.
How much did Red Heat cost? It says
it was a lot more.
Oh, so if we're going to talk about how much we can really compare these apples to apples, because it's only a 6-year time frame, it's not like 20 years. The budget for 48 hours was an estimated $12 million, and the budget for Red Heat estimated $30 million.
Oh no!
$20 million of that was on the end busing that you.
Yeah, I was just going to say that was all the. They had to replace that statue.
But also longer for no reason at 104 minutes.
With far less to do than 48 hours. Less to do.
Did that say Danny DeVito? Oh, maybe it was talking about twins.
He had just been twins that had come out.
So basically, I was looking at the budget report and the audience reception for this. I think I mentioned 48 hours came out the same week as The Toy. The Toy beat it in box office hits, but 48 hours over time has surpassed The Toy in overall monetary gains and critical acclaim.
Another very, very racist movie, The Toy.
I was gonna say, maybe it was just in the zeitgeist. Yeah. Not that it's not in general.
But I have to say, it has not held up over time as far as being like a classic, but there was still something very enjoyable. And I think performances of Nick Nolte and Eddie Murphy were really what was so enjoyable about that. Steve and I were talking about some of the choices Nick Nolte made in Jack Cates' character, where he's just always kind of fidgety and moving around. And those things weren't in the script at all. They were totally actor choices that brought a believability and something to remember about Nick Nolte's character, which is great. I would like to bring out, I found this site called Metacritic, and it had different reviews, and these are from like the public. So I thought I would share what the public thought about this movie. This is somebody called Is Natty Critic, and this review was left in 2010. He says, this is an Eddie Murphy classic. Is this movie going to change the way we view life? No. But it will keep you laughing and nervous at the same time. And that is a delicate balance, one highly underrated. I like to rate films within their genre. And for its genre, it's at least a 9.
At least. Possibly
well,
higher.
Well, yeah. I mean, really, well, you just got one more to go, bud. Just go ahead and do it. No, pull the trigger.
Even more shocking was someone called Steve in 1981. And Steve, is this you?
No.
So this was left in 2020, and I even don't want to read the whole thing, but it's so funny. So you guys can't see this in radio, obviously. This review is really, really long, but the opening statement is Nick Nolte and Eddie Murphy star in this 1982 action comedy, debatable, directed by Walter Hill. It is a pretty simple piece of filmmaking with a simple story. And then the next 5 paragraphs are trying to describe the story. In
yes, yeah, right. True. And doesn't
the,
do it.
And then the closing, though, is great performances, great acting, especially from Annette O'Toole.
Who was what? She?
She was the. She was. Girlfriend. She's actually a decent actress. She was not very good in this movie.
Oh, the redhead with the curly hair.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Who hung
and
up?
Was
she's been in a lot of things. Eyes. This was not one of her top.
And by the way,
she took so much garbage from him the whole movie.
Why did we have to have her throughout the film? That relationship's never paid off. He never goes back and makes up or learns anything about being a schmuck the whole time.
She leaves him.
They really could have just ended that after the opening scene to illustrate that he didn't really care about women. And that would have been that.
Well, there was a little bit more in the script where she kind of gave Nick Nolte the idea to, I forget what, but in the movie, he kind of figured it out on his own. It seemed like there was gonna be more there, and then it just didn't really pan out for some reason.
But like, she's not important, we'll just kind of
it does keep, it's good to set his character
topless
up.
Topless picture though, we definitely just need her topless.
There was no strong females in either one of these movies at all.
No, there were no females that had any part in the script. Everybody was just a puppet or a victim
around,
or a piece of
bait.
Just,
it was like a bait or some object or somebody to push around and use as a body shield or a body cover.
Maybe that's what it was in the 80s. I don't remember that. I just remember a lot of great music.
I was 2, so I don't
know. Yeah, I was pretty little.
Red Heat, when it was released, the year it was released, Twins came out that same year, and that starred Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito.
Which was a hit.
It crushed Red Heat.
Danny DeVito's hilarious.
At the time, it's really interesting. You've got a buddy, kind of a buddy picture of Twins, and you got this buddy picture of Red Heat. Same timeline of popularity for Arnold, and you can see what a different casting and story will do for a movie.
And there've been rumoring that they were going to do a triplets with Schwarzenegger, DeVito, and Eddie Murphy, which I would love to see, but who knows.
Oh, that'd be movie gold.
Right?
Somebody reboot that immediately. So when I went onto the Metacritic.
Amber, real quickly, would you mind if I read the Moneymaker 101 first, that first line? Because when you sent this, I didn't know if you were going to talk about this, but I read that remark and I was like, this sums up what the movie is.
Jim, take it away for Metacritic reviews for Red Heat.
The Moneymaker 101, this is from December 2014. This is the line. This movie is absolutely great. Arnold Schwarzenegger fits the role fantastically, and he really has some great sentences in the film. Sentences in the film. One, not one thing he says is a sentence. And two, who calls dialogue sentences? I mean, I was like, this person got the movie. He got the movie. Sentences, he has some great sentences.
You should read the whole thing, actually.
Oh, yes, please do.
Okay. He has some great sentences in the film, and it has funny scenes such as when a drunk hobo guy comes to Arnold and asks for money for parking, and Arnold hits him and says, "Hooligani? What is that?
Hooligani? Hooligani?"
Nothing film is funnier than the abuse of homeless people, Jim.
Yes, yes. The film is a very nice thriller with awesome and funny moments, and the cast is very good. James Belushi is a fantastic choice, and without him, this movie wouldn't be as nearly as good as it is. This is a classic.
I want to find Moneymaker
101 is Mrs. Belushi. Yes.
I want to find this person and do what Arnold does to everybody and just punch him in the face. That's unbelievable.
I mean, I read this, and I was like, this person gets it.
This was the target audience for Walter Hill.
Lonely Metacritic reviewers.
That's from 2014.
That's what I'm saying. Yes.
Jim, read Dreadlord Avatar.
Okay. Just rewatch.
Rewatched.
Just rewatched it.
Already he's a liar.
I gotta rewatch it. I watched it on Netflix and wow, what an amazing and ageless film.
Ageless.
Loved it back in the 80s and love it even more today. Awesome lines. Belushi and Arnold are brilliant. Great chemistry. That's my mind blown right there. Acting by all is really fantastic and convincing. Red Heat easily earns a spot among my favorite Arnold films, including T1, T2, and Predator.
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
Lofty company.
Yeah, really. Those are some really solid movies.
Someone needs to find Dreadlord Avatar and lock this person away.
Yeah.
Somebody I feel like I who go. Is publicly making these statements is not a sound mind, not a sound body. This person is not contributing to society.
No.
Can anybody write Metacritic? Is it like a wiki page?
No, they have to be vetted through a huge system.
You do have to sign up. You have to make a profile, but yeah, anyone can.
I feel like
review on there.
Doing that just so I can go and make the next reviews for these two, so that those aren't the last ones that are on the page.
To whom it may concern,
Dreadlord Avatar. Blah, 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 blah.
Red Heat is the godfather of all cop buddy movies.
I'm never going to.
What's your Metacritic name, Steve?
Ooh, I don't know.
We already know Jim's, right?
I've a boner.
Yeah.
Ivan Danko, Arnold's name from Red Heat, of course.
Yeah, that's very meta.
Oh my gosh.
From Metacritic.
The first name I wrote down for his character was Vanya, and I realized later it was short for Ivan.
Yeah, isn't a nickname supposed to be shorter?
You'd think. In Russia, even nicknames are long.
That's right. Everything's backwards. Oh, can we just talk about the font choice? Oh,
the main titles.
In Red Heat.
They love that backwards R.
Because
and the backwards N. And if you make it backwards, it automatically becomes Russian.
That you're that's in right. A foreign country when your letters are backwards.
No, it was American. It was just backwards.
Yeah, it wasn't actually Russian. It was just they had like a couple of letters turned around.
I couldn't read it.
As an homage to what?
I couldn't read it.
Yeah, it's a very clever homage to Russian alphabet.
I couldn't read it. I was like trying to go. I'm like, oh, they really use Russian titles.
I just wanted to mention were randomly other miscellaneous points. I thought it was weird that when Eddie Murphy got out of jail, he'd been in jail for 2.5 years, but acted like he'd been in jail for 20. Did y'all get that? He was like, oh, well, this style was in style when I was out. And it's like, oh, bro, right. You've only been in jail for 2.5 years.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't understand this technology anymore.
Is this a typewriter?
Very good point.
Well, how about the fact that they were supposed to have $500,000? That was the amount of money that was in the trunk of the car. And when he went to grab the briefcase, it wouldn't have held $5,000. It was like the size of somebody's fanny pack, you know? It was ridiculously small. And then they were running around, like for some reason, dudes just walking around San Francisco with a bag of money, like through the train station and on the street and behind the bar, through the alley. Like, dude, go somewhere and like do something with it. Don't just walk around waiting for somebody to come and get you. And then they opened it up at one point and it was only half full. You know how big a stack of money that would be?
When Steve brought this up during the film, I was like, no, actually, what circles do you run in that you have seen and would have an idea of what this would look like? Like, Steve was outraged. She's like, that's not
that was like a
$500,000. There's no way that could fit in a briefcase. And I'm like, what's been happening at your house that I don't know about?
I have stacks of money hidden all over the place.
He's like, but you couldn't even carry that with one arm.
No, you would have to have two huge duffel bags full of money to have $500,000 in cash, even if they were $1,000 bills, which I'm not convinced exist.
Is this from all the work you've been doing on the heist?
$500,000. So you would need like $1,500,000 bills.
Zach, this was the conversation we had during the movie.
That's probably not the right math, but feel like I'm in close.
It was a lot more interesting than when I watched it.
By the time we had finished the conversation, we were still crossing the street in real time.
We're waiting for the garage to open.
Well, I think probably guess which movie we're going to pick as the winner, but I am shocked that the same director and writer put out an unfortunately subpar movie after a debut like 48 hours, as racist and outdated as it was. So I got to give it to 48 hours. Mm.
Yeah, I really want to see another 48 hours now, actually, which I've also never seen.
Do you really?
Because I'm curious, like, how do they get these two back together? Why in the world would these two people find a reason to somehow, you know, solve another case?
And it's only for another 48 hours, though.
Yes.
My vote is for the 1976 version of Richie.
The real winner.
The real winner. And by the way, they stopped printing $1,000 bills in 1946. Oh. There's no way there was $500,000 in that crappy briefcase.
I'm glad we put that to rest. I also vote for 48 hours. And the whole thing is too, I think Deaver or Amber said it, Eddie Murphy basically made the movie. To be honest, the dialogue in each movie, not very good. But Eddie Murphy does raise it up with his improv. I mean, he does that scene in the bar and there's other scenes where he actually kind of brings more personality into the whole thing. So completely helps save that part of the movie. And then just the bond between Nick Nolte and Eddie Murphy far outweigh the bond, if there was any bond, between Jim Belushi and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
48 hours made me laugh. I mean, even outside of Eddie Murphy, there were a couple of times. And yeah, Red Heat, it was just like, please get these people off my television.
Eddie Murphy was the reason that 48 hours was so successful. And it's why he's still popular today. And Nick Nolte probably still has a career. I don't know what Arnold, what's his name? Is he still working? I don't even know.
He's around.
I think it's safe to say Zach should start the script for Triplets.
Let's do it.
Or Red Heat too.
More Red Heat.
Hotter Red.
I think that wraps it up for today. Thank you so much for Walter and Jim Bastano joining us for our conversation today. Please, everyone,
this was even better with guests on.
I love it.
Lots of fun. Jim, be quiet. Don't talk when I'm talking, Jim.
Wait, you're not supposed to wait till I stop talking. Okay, now you can go.
So I can say, Jim, I don't know why we would even bother to do what?
Look for The Heist, or not The Heist. Look for Heist on Netflix coming up. Look for some Supreme Lexus brainwashing later this year.
Yeah, check go put out. A car in your driveway with a big bow on it. That's what you need to do. Up
you know someone graduating? Get them a car.
Buy them a Lexus.
check out some previously recorded episodes of So Fast, So Furious, Zach's podcast. Yeah, check out later this month, check out Housebroken, the new animated sitcom on Fox that I directed. World premiere.
Awesome.
And thanks. And we'll see everyone next week. Have a great night.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Sound effects courtesy of the Soundly app. Go to getsoundly.com for your complete sound effect platform. Intro and outro music for this episode is District 4 by Kevin McLeod. Hear more like this on incompetech.com.
Thanks for listening, everybody, and be sure to rate us on iTunes and give us a review if you feel like it. Shoot us an email at filmfightpodcast@gmail.com if there's a matchup you'd like to see. And that's it for this week. Catch us next time for another episode of the Film Fight Podcast.